Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lin and Ana Mateo. We close our program with the next episode of The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Sri Lanka is under a state of emergency following bomb attacks at hotels and Christian religious centers in the country Sunday. The attacks killed almost 300 people and wounded hundreds of others. Sunday was Easter, the holiest day in the Christian year. President Maithripala Sirisena's emergency order permits police expanded power to search, seize, arrest, and question people. A curfew is also in effect from sunset to sunrise. The government also has blocked most social media websites. Sri Lankan officials said Monday that intelligence agencies had warned weeks ago of possible attacks by a little-known Muslim extremist group, National Tawfiq Jamaat. It has now been blamed for the Easter attacks in the mainly Buddhist country. Sri Lankan Health Minister Rajitha Senaratne said the intelligence agencies began issuing the warnings on April 4th. The defense ministry wrote to the police chief with information that included the group's name. And police wrote April 11th to the heads of security of the Judiciary and Diplomatic Security Division. It was not immediately clear what action, if any, was taken after the threats. Officials said they knew where the group trained and kept shelter. However, they did not identify any of the 7 suicide bombers whose bodies were recovered or the suspects arrested so far.
After Senaratne spoke to reporters Monday, a car parked near one of the bombed churches exploded. People fled. Police found 3 additional bombs near the vehicle and tried to disarm them, but they exploded. No one was hurt. Also on Monday, police found 87 bomb devices near Colombo's bus station, officials said. They did not say if they were linked to Sunday's attacks. Senaratne also said Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe and his cabinet did not know about the warnings until after the attacks. Sirisena was out of the country at the time of the attacks. He had removed Wickremesinghe and his cabinet from power in late October. The Supreme Court has since returned Wickremesinghe as Prime Minister. However, he has been barred from meetings of the country's Security Council since October. All of the bombers were Sri Lankan citizens, but officials suspect foreign links, Senaratne said. Sirisena will meet with diplomats in Colombo Tuesday to ask for help in the investigation. 2 other government ministers also suggested intelligence failures in Sri Lanka. The telecommunications minister wrote on Twitter, "Serious action needs to be taken as to why this warning was ignored." Another minister said some security officers warned about the possibility that 2 suicide bombers would target politicians.
The Roman Catholic leader of Colombo, Cardinal Malcolm Ranjith, said the attacks could have been prevented. We placed our hands on our heads when we came to know that these deaths could have been avoided. Why this was not prevented, he said. Sri Lanka's defense minister described the bombings as a terrorist attack by religious extremists. Police said 24 suspects had been arrested, but no one has claimed responsibility. Most of the explosions were in Colombo, the country's capital. Outside Colombo, St. Sebastian's Church in the town of Negombo was also targeted. Nilantha Lakmal, a 41-year-old businessman, and his family went to St. Sebastian's for Easter service Sunday. He said they all escaped unharmed, but he remained horrified by images of the bodies being removed from the church. At the Shangri-La Hotel, one witness said people were being dragged out after the explosion. There was blood everywhere, said business owner Banuka Harishchandra of Colombo, who was going to the hotel for a meeting. People didn't know what was going on. It was panic mode. Most of those killed were Sri Lankans, but the Ministry of Tourism said 39 foreigners were also killed. The U.S. said several Americans were among the dead. Britain, India, China, Japan, and Portugal said they also lost citizens. Two Muslim groups in Sri Lanka condemned the church attacks. The leader of the Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis, expressed sympathy at the end of his traditional Easter blessing in Rome.
World leaders congratulated comedian Volodymyr Zelensky Monday on being elected president of Ukraine. The country's Central Election Commission reported that Zelensky received 73% of the vote, with nearly all ballots counted. Incumbent President Petro Poroshenko received 24%. Zelensky had no political experience before running for president. He is best known for playing the president in a Ukrainian comedy show. The show, called Servant of the People, is about a Ukrainian high school teacher who becomes president by chance. One of Zelensky's campaign messages centered on his desire to unify the country. Ukraine has been divided over repeated debates about national identity. The country is also at war with rebels in the east. The rebels receive support from Russia's government. Election experts said Zelensky appeared to have won in both western and eastern areas, a rare happening in post-Soviet Ukraine. Poroshenko had appealed to voters to choose him so he could continue on a path to bring Ukraine closer to the West. He had also campaigned on a promise to fight government corruption. Election monitors from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, were in Ukraine for the voting. The group said the election respected fundamental freedoms and prepared the way for a democratic and orderly change of power. Declaring victory Sunday night, Zelensky told supporters he would not let the Ukrainian people down. As a citizen of Ukraine, I can say to all countries in the post-Soviet Union, look at us, anything is possible. Zelensky has promised to reduce corruption, which many Ukrainians see as the reason for rising prices and worsening living conditions. Zelensky said he also plans to continue the pro-European path that Poroshenko began and will aim to improve his country's ties with Russia. A spokesman for Russian President Vladimir Putin, Dmitry Peskov, said on Monday it was too early to talk about Putin congratulating Mr. Zelensky or about the possibility of working together. Peskov added that Russia respects the choice of the Ukrainian people and will wait for steps by Zelensky before making judgments. U.S. President Donald Trump and French leader Emmanuel Macron called to congratulate Zelensky on his win. German Chancellor Angela Merkel also pledged her support. In a joint letter to Zelensky, EU Council President Donald Tusk and European Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker praised Ukrainians for their strong attachment to democracy and the rule of law. I'm Brian Lynn.
Measles is only found in human beings. There is a highly effective and safe vaccine for the disease. So in theory, measles could be destroyed. Yet the number of measles cases is on the rise. The World Health Organization reports that in the first 3 months of 2019, the number of cases is 3 times higher than it was last year. Africa alone has had a 700% increase compared to last year. The Democratic Republic of Congo reported 67,000 measles cases and 901 measles-related deaths in 2018. This year, WHO officials have noted more than 16,000 suspected measles cases in the country. That number includes 284 measles-related deaths in the first weeks of 2019. Between September 2018 and February 2019, Madagascar reported over 67,000 measles cases, including 828 deaths. Dr. Anthony Fauci directs the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, part of the United States government's National Institutes of Health. He says the measles situation in Madagascar is extremely serious. Madagascar has almost 1,000 deaths and has tens of thousands of infections, Fauci said. The National Institutes of Health warns that a decrease in measles vaccination is causing a preventable return of this often deadly disease worldwide. Fauci told VOA that 1 in 10 children who get infected with measles will get an ear infection that could cause deafness. 1 in 20 would get pneumonia. 1 in 1,000 would get brain swelling, what we call encephalitis. And 1 to 3 per 1,000 would die. To say that measles is a trivial disease is completely incorrect. Walter Ornstein is with the Emory University Vaccine Center in Atlanta, Georgia. He has spent his life working to end measles. Ornstein says possible effects of the disease are worse in poor countries. You start off with children who are already at greater risk. They may be malnourished. They may have compromised immune systems, They may be underweight and may have no access to health care. So measles is a big killer, he said. You have a 90% chance of getting measles if you have not been vaccinated and you come in contact with someone who has it. Dr. Rebecca Martin is the director of the Center for Global Health at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She is working to remove measles from Africa completely. It is very infectious. It will find everybody who is not protected against measles, Martin said. Health experts advise patients to get two treatments of the measles vaccine. U.S. health officials say educating parents about both the disease and the vaccine is an important step in stopping the spread. Equally important is making vaccination a top goal of health systems worldwide. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1918, on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, a truce took effect between the Allies and Germany. But not until 7 months later was a treaty signed to officially end what was known as the Great War and the War to End All Wars. Shirley Griffith and Larry West continue the story of the peace conference following World War I.
American President Woodrow Wilson was one of the chief negotiators at the conference in Paris. Throughout the early months of 1919, he struggled hard for a treaty that would result in peace with justice for all sides. Wilson demanded a treaty that provided for a new international organization. He called it the League of Nations. To Wilson, the League was more important than any other part of the treaty. Not all Americans shared Wilson's opinion. Many feared the League would take away the power of the American government to declare war and make treaties. They also agreed with the leaders of the other Allied nations. Establishing the League was less important than punishing the defeated enemy.
The other major Allied leaders at the peace conference were Prime Minister David Lloyd George of Britain, Premier Georges Clemenceau of France, and Premier Vittorio Otto of Italy. Lloyd George, Clemenceau, and Otto understood how much Wilson wanted the League of Nations. They used this knowledge to win Wilson's approval for other parts of the peace treaty. Wilson soon learned that to get the League, he had to compromise on many issues. For example, he had to accept British and French demands to make Germany pay all war damages. The payments added up to more than $300,000 million. Wilson also had to accept the Allied takeover of Germany's colonies.
Some of Wilson's compromises violated his belief in self-determination. This was the right of all people to decide for themselves who would govern them. One compromise, for example, gave to Japan Germany's colonial rights in the Shantung area of China. China protested the decision. It asked that control of Shantung be returned to the Chinese government. But President Wilson needed Japan's support for the League of Nations. So he accepted Japan's demand for control of Shantung. There were other violations of the policy of self-determination. These affected the people and land along the borders of several European nations. For example, 3 million Germans were made citizens of the new nation of Czechoslovakia. Millions of other Germans were forced into the newly formed nation of Poland. And Italy received territory that had belonged to Austria.
Today, most history experts agree Woodrow Wilson was correct in opposing these decisions. They say Germany's loss of territory and citizens caused deep bitterness, and the bitterness helped lead to the rise of fascist dictator Adolf Hitler in the 1930s. In East Asia, Japanese control over parts of China created serious tensions. Both decisions helped plant the seeds for the bloody harvest of World War II 20 years later. But Allied leaders at the Paris Peace Conference were not looking far into the future. As one person said at the time, they divided Europe like people cutting up a tasty pie.
After months of negotiations, the peace treaty was completed. The Allies gave it to a German delegation on May 7, 1919. The head of the delegation objected immediately. He said the treaty was unfair. He urged his government not to sign it. At first, Germany did not sign. The leader of the government refused and resigned in protest. But a new government was formed, and its leaders signed the document at a ceremony at the palace in Versailles outside Paris. Finally, World War I was officially over.
President Woodrow Wilson returned to the United States after the treaty signing ceremony. He was not completely satisfied with the treaty, yet he believed it was still valuable, because it established the League of Nations. Wilson's battle for the League was only half over when the treaty was signed in Europe. He had to win approval from the United States Senate. That half of the battle would not be easy.
Part of the problem was political. Wilson was a member of the Democratic Party. The Senate was controlled by the Republican Party. Also, Wilson had refused to name any important Republicans to his negotiating team at the peace conference. Part of the problem was personal. A number of senators disliked Wilson. One was Republican Senator Henry Cabot Lodge. Lodge was the powerful chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He told a friend he never expected to hate anyone as much as he hated Wilson.
Wilson spoke before the Senate just 2 days after he returned from Europe. He urged it to approve the peace treaty. Wilson said, "The united power of free nations must put a stop to aggression, and the world must be given peace. Shall we and any other free people refuse to accept this great duty? Dare we reject it and break the heart of the world. We cannot turn back. America shall show the way. The light streams upon the path ahead and nowhere else.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee began hearings on the treaty. It heard a number of people who opposed the League of Nations. They said the League would destroy the freedom and independence of the United States. The committee completed its hearings and prepared a report for the full Senate. The report said the United States should reject the treaty unless changes were made. The committee proposed almost 40 changes.
The committee's report was a blow to President Wilson, both politically and personally. He had worked extremely hard to win Europe's support for the idea of a League of Nations. Great crowds in Paris had cheered him and his idea. Now, the Senate of his own country was about to reject it. Wilson decided he must take his case out of the hands of the people's representatives. He would take the case directly to the people themselves. He would build public support for the treaty. If enough citizens supported it, he believed, the Senate could not reject it.
President Wilson planned a speaking trip all across the country. His family and his doctor urged him not to go. They said he was still weak from a recent sickness. But Wilson refused the advice. He said the treaty was more important to him than his own life. The president left Washington in early September. He traveled in a special train. In city after city, he made speeches and rode in parades. He shook thousands of hands. At times, he suffered from a painful headache. But there was no time to rest.
Everywhere Wilson stopped, he urged the people to support the League of Nations. It was, he said, the only hope for peace. In Boulder, Colorado, 10,000 people waited to hear him. By then, Wilson was extremely weak. He had to be helped up the steps of the building where he was to speak. He made the speech. He said he was working to honor the men who had died in the war. He said he was working for the children of the world.
Wilson put all his heart and energy into his speeches. And as his family and doctor had warned, the pressure was too great. While in Wichita, Kansas, the pain in his head became terrible. He could not speak clearly. His face seemed frozen. A blood vessel had broken in his brain. Wilson had suffered a stroke. The president was forced to return to Washington. His condition got worse every day. Soon, he was unable to move. Woodrow Wilson would spend the rest of his presidency as a terribly sick man. He continued to hold on to his dreams of a League of Nations, but his dreams now filled a broken body.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for more stories and information from around the world. Thanks for listening. I'm Ashley Thompson.